Trigger warning. This podcast addresses deeply rooted and challenging topics. It is written for open-minded individuals who are seeking insight and alternative perspectives on the complex histories of cults and their leaders. Many cults are destructive, and some of the content presented here may be emotionally triggering. This podcast is not recommended for young people, as some content may be inappropriate. Listener discretion advised. Welcome to Cult Following.
Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Todd Fisher. Dr. Katie and I are so pleased with the reception the first season of the Cult Following podcast received. We look forward to bringing you more episodes together in the future. But for the next few episodes, it's just going to be me, along with special guest hosts, because Dr. Katie is busy with her practice for a bit. But rest assured, she's looking forward to coming back as soon as she can. Until then, I hope you enjoy the second season of Cult Following. Hi, everyone. Hi, Don. Hi, Britt.
Hey, Todd.
So, yeah,
Good to have you on the show. Thank you.
Here I am back again. Seems like I come on about every couple episodes. You know, I produce a whole bunch of podcasts. I have all kinds of podcasts I do, and one of them is called Cult Following. And every once in a while, I do these kind of double episodes. So this episode we're doing tonight is for No Earthly Explanation, and it's for Cult Following. So people will be able to get this there too. And we always love when fans go and start to like each other's podcasts. And I thought, who better to talk about UFO cults with than you guys?
I'm so glad you thought of us.
I mean, I don't know anyone else, so it's got to be.
Well, speaking of the UFO community, I know few people that have actually been involved from the outside, where they were part of an investigation looking into an alleged UFO cult, or they were primarily involved with the disbanding, the shutting down of said UFO cult. And then knowing the history of the situation dating back to the early 50s, the mid 50s, when many of them took off, and right up to contemporary times, the idea that a religious group would use UFOs as a front, as an attraction to lure people in, thinking that they would be taken to a more spiritual, more galactic level of contact with outer space beings, with space brothers, as some of them would even label, and that people would fall for this. People would fall into their clutches. And In reality, they seldom, if ever, had anything to do with UFOs. Again, it was strictly used to, you know, set the trap, bait people. And my experience is that with these UFO groups, unfortunately, they're mainly women that are drawn in. Yes.
Let me jump into a little bit about what UFO religions and cults are, kind of by definition, what they're made up of. UFO religions are groups that deal with the alleged communication between humans and extraterrestrial beings, with forms of communication that include telepathy and astral projection. This is kind of the root of how these cults are formed. These groups often believe that humanity can be saved after being educated by the aliens as to how to improve society. And alien abduction belief often leads to the formation of a UFO religion.
Yes.
The earliest notes, I went through and I had to look up my notes today to see how many there were. There's actually been over 24 UFO cults recorded in the last 75 years, and half of those are still active today, which is interesting.
Yes.
And the first known UFO cult was called I Am Religious Activity, which was founded in 1930 by Guy Ballard. And that's seen as the first UFO religion. And the Theorist Society was founded by George King. That's also been given a distinction as being one of the first UFO religions. And interestingly enough, Don, is that scholars identify the 1947 Roswell incident as a key event within the history of UFO spirituality, that a lot of people didn't really even get interested in it until that event. And then, of course, a lot of people know about the bigger things, the really newsworthy cults that happen, which are typically destructive cults that involve death. And that would be things like Heaven's Gate and the Order of the Solar Temple are the most controversial of those UFO beliefs. And we have, Dr. Katie and I have an episode of Cult Following that is about the Order of the Solar Temple, although we have not touched on Heaven's Gate yet. We'll be talking about a little bit in the show today. And interestingly enough, Scientology is often seen by scholars as being a UFO religion, just mainly due to the fact that it's kind of its presence of having a space opera involved in it, in their Scientology doctrine. There's a lot of that. And of course, L. Ron Hubbard, the creator of Scientology, was a science fiction writer. So there was a whole lot of work out there anyways. And you know, I think one thing that's really fascinating is people that actually do know religion or did grow up Christian or did grow up in other ways, you always hear a lot of people talk about the supernatural events of the Old and New Testaments. And the people that are really into this really look at a lot of the stuff like maybe Adam and Eve were genetic creations that were put here. There's a lot of times where you hear Star Wars evolved from the idea that, you know, angels with flaming swords would become Jedi Knights, you know? So there's a whole lot of stuff like this. Even if you look at things like, kind of the end of the world narratives with the floating city of Jerusalem coming down to earth and angels with flaming swords coming out. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is very supernatural, very UFO mythology in a way. And a lot of people try to tie that in together and that maybe, you know, we were seeded from another planet. It's really interesting stuff. And even things like the Zachariah Sitchin novels, the 10th Planet series, if you all are familiar with that, is the idea that Earth was seeded from a 10th planet that had this orbit that went so far away from the sun that they just knew eventually their planet would freeze. But it was going to take, you know, 1,000 years for that to happen. So they developed a plan to jump off that planet and then come to Earth. And then eventually, if enough time went past, that planet would start to eventually come back around and we would see it and we would know that there really was this 10th planet. And there's a whole series of these books. And Zachariah Sitchin is like famous figure that, you know, is almost like a cult god in how he kind of explains how humans evolved here. It's really interesting.
And what you're talking about, what we're describing is typically agnostics who are, you know, halfway between accepting the divine as opposed to, well, we can handle something extraterrestrial. We can handle as far as life on another planet that potentially had seeded us here easier than accepting that there's a divine creator, that there's something as far as that remains up in the heavens. And as a result, we can steer people, we can enlist people, we can attract people with the hope that they too will be able to meet a Venusian, a Martian. And much of this stemmed from the contact, the element of the early to mid 1950s. You had mentioned, Todd, that some of this more UFO related spiritual acceptance originated, and I wouldn't say necessarily with Roswell as much as that summer wave of 1947. That the phenomenon arrived, and as a result, people were, you know, glancing skyward for a change. And as a result, a growing acceptance that maybe we were not alone, that we were being visited. And there were, as it would turn out, these charlatans who would claim actual contact, meetings with, at the time, not knowing what we do today about our nearest planetary neighbors are within our own solar system, that the likes of a George Adamski, for example, who would claim to have met a Venusian by the name of Orthon in the Mojave Desert in 1952. And it didn't matter that these people were still ostracized by the actual UFO community. They were not accepted as genuine. They were not accepted as presenting anything scientific towards the reality of the phenomena. But they, but nonetheless, they attracted a huge following from around the world because they were presenting something on a spiritual plane. They were presenting something that was halfway between a higher level of existence and the acceptance of a God Almighty, so to speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think that people that follow, well, or I should say maybe believe in maybe that UFOs seeded us or that there's some higher power that exists as an alien race, do you think that that appeals to an individual, or do you think the individuals need to join a group to do this? Because there are certainly these large cults and religions that have a lot of members and people must seek that out. But do you think it has to be on a group level or an individual level?
After Adamski, for example, after Adamski passed away, and there was kind of a, as often is the case, a split between those who wanted to continue the serious research of his claims of their, you know, being life on other planets, that we were being visited. And then there was the Valley Center, UFO Education Center in Valley Center, California. And they had a spring or a sister center in Appleton, Wisconsin, which we became involved with investigating, because you had at that time Charlotte Blobe, who would even style her hair, and she would wear a robe with slippers, trying to appear just as Adamski described the Venusian Orthon back in 1952. And she had co-directors, the late Thomas Hyman, and I believe it was a Catherine Reed. And it turned out to be nothing more than a sex cult. And one of the women we were working with, she had left at the time a 1- and 3-year-old child. I mean, she left her husband. So that's where it the brainwashing becomes, you know, the central concern, that they lose all touch with reality. They will put in, they will work 2 full-time jobs and turn over their paychecks to these groups. And when we started to infiltrate and we started to actually spy, and we found, like, in the basement, all the cots all lined up where the membership would live, they would stay, and they would work their jobs and to work with the families. In the one woman's case, for example, where we worked with her husband, her brother, and her father, where there was an attempt to actually abduct her. And at the time, we were working with Dr. Carolyn Smith, who specialized in religious cults at University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. And they managed to abduct her, take her away. And she, in turn, had them arrested. That's how brainwashed she was. She had her own husband. She had her father. She had her brother arrested with charges of kidnapping. So then we realized we needed to go to the professionals. And at the time, the very person who had started the deprogramming of these cult members, and that was Ted Patrick of San Diego, California. And I remember when Playboy magazine did a big write-up on his techniques and his creating these this methodology of snapping someone out of that religious fervor of where they would lose all concept of their families, of their children, of their professions, and sign over their lives to these UFO cults. And in this case, the next time with Ted Patrick waiting at another location, and the fact that they abducted her, they once again, they were successful in getting her away. They took her to this undisclosed location. And I'll never forget, because we were waiting for the word, it took him 3 full days. And Ted Patrick's technique was to get you to finally think for yourself again, to break free from the chains of essentially mental bondage.
Mm-hmm.
And not to deprive you of food and water and sleep, and just finally just break you to the point that you were just a sobbing, weeping child, and to finally realize what you did. And you know how we finally set that group out of business? We hit them in their pocketbook. We were working at the time with District Attorney Donald Poppy of Calumet County, and we challenged their tax exempt status, and that's how we finally shut them down.
Wow.
And so it can be done, but to see the results, to see the effects on these poor people and their families left behind wondering if they'll ever see their loved one again, the children, will we ever see mom or dad again? And we know it firsthand.
In regards to that, into that particular case, what was the end game for these women? Like, what was the actual end game mentally that they projected onto them to say, this is what you'll get out of this? Was it, you know, planetary travel and living amongst the gods in the sky? I mean, was it this ridiculous, outlandish claim that they believed was actually going to happen for them, to where it was worth the sacrifice? Because as a mother, there's no way I would leave my kids for anyone. I don't care. So
right.
It's amazing to me that they would go, I have to do this for the betterment of my family and my people, because this is like the ultimate sacrifice. What was their end game that they would get from this? Because I just can't fathom what it would be. I just can't.
Well, Britt, when we had moles, we had people actually go into the headquarters and then record for us. And so we were constantly doing our homework as to what their weak links were, how we needed to approach this and shut this group down. And for example, one of the things that was easily discernible when you first entered the building was they played this very rhythmic music that went back and forth, and it was very much in tune with your heartbeat, your heart rhythm. And we would learn, working with Dr. Smith, that that's what immediately made them highly susceptible to hypnosis, to mm-hmm. brainwashing, the idea that, and then even their lecturing, their seminars were very sing-songy, almost in tune with that rhythm of that background, that music. And people whose minds were susceptible, who were open to that type of I'm trying to think of, there was a specific word that they even used, but one of the things that they promised was that you would be taken to that next level of enlightenment, and you yourselves would be taken on board a ship. You would be taken to their home planet. You would meet Orthon, the space brother from Venus, who was here to take us away from our atomic research, our atomic potential of self-annihilation, and that at the given time, they would be rescued, that these people would all be taken away and live in total utopia on another planet for the rest of their lives. Of course, sacrificing their very children, their husbands, their family. But such is brainwashing, where you no longer are thinking for yourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, firsthand, I had a sibling of mine that got involved with a very cult like church that got her to the point mentally where it was, if I have to abandon my family, I'll abandon and turn my back on my family. I mean, it's just because that's what they convince you of. You know, they tell you your family's bad and you need to step away from them. So it's right. You know, it's always been a topic of interest of mine and how it works and why it works the way it does, because it's fascinating to me that it starts like a chain reaction. You know, you get a spark and all of a sudden it turns into this ginormous flame. And it just fascinates me on how quick it ignites, because it does start with one person or a single thread of like thought where it's like, oh, I do wonder about that. Oh, I would love that enlightenment, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, they just know how to give you the Kool-Aid and all of a sudden everybody's on it. It's just crazy to me.
And Todd, correct me if I'm wrong. These people, these cult charlatans, they typically prey on people who are lost, who are not involved, they're not physically, they're not mentally challenged. In other words, they're living a life of searching, of looking for, in many cases, a father figure, someone who, again, will take them in and fill that void.
Mm-hmm.
And they're yeah. ripe for the picking, so to speak.
Yeah. Or since just being part of a community sometimes could be as simple as that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, what you were getting into there, you know, toward the end of what you were saying, Don, reminded me a lot of Heaven's Gate. And I wanted to touch on Heaven's Gate a little bit, because I think it's really the most notorious UFO cult of them all. And Heaven's Gate was started by Marshall Applewhite. And it's gone by various names. It didn't really become Heaven's Gate until the 90s, just a few years before everyone committed suicide. It was known as Heaven's Gate. But right. scholars have yeah. described the theology of Heaven's Gate as a mixture of millennialism, New Age, and ufology. But it has been characterized as a UFO religion more than anything. And the central belief of the group was that the followers could transform themselves into immortal extraterrestrial beings by rejecting their human nature, and they would ascend to heaven, referred to as their next level, or an evolutionary level above human. And later on, they actually kind of adapted that even more to believing that the body was merely a container or a vehicle for the soul, and that their consciousness would be transferred to their new next level bodies upon their death, which were on the alien ship. So they right. added to their mythology as they went along. Mm-hmm. And in March of 1997, they had a ritual suicide.
Right. 39 of them, right.
39 people, yeah. 39 active members, including the head of the cult. And right. And if you remember, it was Nichelle Nichols, who played Uhura in Star Trek, had a relative right. who died in that cult. I can't remember if it was her right. brother yeah. or her sister, but it was, she had a member that died in that cult. And yeah. And I often wonder, you know, it's one thing to get people to believe in that, oh, well, maybe this planet was seeded by extraterrestrials and, you know, their mothership's going to come back and we're all going to get to go home. And, you know, maybe there's a way in which people kind of quantify this as a religion. But to get people to kill themselves for this religion is a whole other level of
yes.
of something, you know, and what kind of how deep their belief system went, or just maybe how enigmatic the leader of it was that could convince them to do that. What do you think about that?
Well, what is, it's fascinating to me as we are witnessing so often as far as with these mass shootings, and then to learn afterwards that, well, they were on our radar, but we didn't do anything about it. The thing is, as far as Heaven's Gate was on our radar, we knew about them years before when they originally, it was, you mentioned Applewhite, but then it was also Bonnie Nettles, who the two right. of them, they originally started out, they went by the name Bo and Peep.
Mm-hmm.
And they got people to sell their lives' possessions. They got people to congregate and come for the arrival of the mothership in the mountains outside of Denver, Colorado, that the end of the world was imminent, and that all people were going to be taken off the planet before it was too late. And obviously it never happened. And all these people, bankrupt, broke, as far as having given up everything for essentially a seat on the ark. And it never happened. So then to hear about this years later, and here's the same players, the same people, once again, waving the same carrot. And we're crying foul. We're telling everybody, these people need to be arrested. They need to be at least watched and monitored, because they're singing the same song. And then for everyone to plead ignorance and go that after 39 people, though, as far as mass suicide, and that the mothership again was going to come and take them away to safety before the planet would destroy itself. And to then hear all these doctors and all these scientists and these experts, well, we should have seen this and we should have recognized this. But the point is, you didn't, because you wouldn't listen to us, because it was the same people who were perpetrating these exact same cult as far as environment that they had 10, 15, 20 years earlier. And so we are witnessing it all over every week, that people are getting away with not performing due diligence, in that when someone is a repeat offender, when you have people that essentially are handing out the same business cards with just a different name, a different alias, they're still perpetrating the same crimes. And the fact that there are 39 people that died as a result of the incompetence of the people who we tried to warn, and it fell on deaf ears. And I will forever be holding them accountable, because 39 people should not have died.
And it's interesting to me too, because if you think about it, so out of those 39 people, I wonder, because I remember when that happened, and my parents, and it's like, not every single one of them walked into there. I can't think that every single one of them walked in there and went, yep, I'm going to take my life today for this guy. I'm willing to think that some of them had doubt, had that moment of normal doubt, but the peer pressure of it, of the, you know, and having the leader right there. No, don't doubt yourself. This is what we need to do, because I hate to even say it in a sense, but it's almost like ego driven. Like, all these people are following what I'm doing and they're going to kill themselves for me, you know? And it's like, I can't imagine what was going through their minds. And even some that maybe started thinking about, this doesn't seem right. You know, it's one thing to be a part of a cult and follow that style, that pattern, but to give your life for it, that has to be partial peer pressure in regards to, aside from those that truly feel led to, that's what we're going to do and I'm going to die for it. You know what I mean? Like, there had to have been some people thinking it through, going, this doesn't seem right, but were peer pressured into doing it because it's what they needed to do.
It's hard to say based on the crime scene, because what's interesting about it is, you know, they put everyone in essentially an identical uniform. I think most people remember the, the Nike sneakers that everyone was wearing, which Nike discontinued shortly thereafter because they became known as their cult sneaker. And they all had a certain amount of money, a certain amount of change in their pocket, which was to, you know, pay the space tolls, supposedly. And they all had just a certain amount of the same, everyone had the same utensils. They essentially all had the same uniform. They all laid in their bed. They were all covered in a sheet. Everyone was poisoned. Everyone had a bag over their head to be suffocated. And there was a person on duty with a gun just in case. These people were going to die that night, no matter what.
And Todd, I mentioned as far as the UFO Education Center, and when we were spying on the building and all the beds, the cots lined up down in the basement. And it was quite, for me, it was an eerie scene that the Heaven's Gate Center in San Diego reminded me exactly of that same scene. Well, that it was all these bunk beds all, lined up, and the way they were just all lying there almost as though in repose.
Yeah, that they there was certainly no pandemonium to it all. Everyone was just laying where they needed to be. Whereas in Jonestown, bodies are strewn everywhere from people being poisoned and just walking out into the field and falling over. Like, it was a an incredibly different type of situation.
Yeah, that was more like a massacre in the sense of how the bodies were found. Yeah.
But that's Heaven's Gate is a really interesting one, that people were willing to take their lives for that cause, that they were so sure that they would wind up. And this also coincided with Hale Bopp, the comet. So they
Hale Bopp was going to actually create a global extinction scenario. And as a result, you know,
the Heaven's Gate people believed that their ship was in the comet, that it was, that's how it was being camouflaged. And that's why they came, because they knew it would, you know, it wouldn't be known to people when it showed up. Heaven's Gate is a really interesting one. It's probably the kind of the gold standard of UFO cults and for destructive cults. It's still talked about today. Now there's plenty of other UFO cults that are out there. Realism is one of them. Of course, you know, you heard a little bit of Scientology is sort of veiled that way. And there's plenty of other smaller ones. Some of these are much bigger than others. Some just sort of are more, you know, groups that aren't necessarily UFO cults, but believe that maybe, you know, we might have received things from people in another world or another planet. People that believe in extraterrestrials, but don't necessarily worship those extraterrestrials. So there's a lot of technological types of cults like that. And there's too many for us to go over today. And I just really wanted to touch on the broad strokes with you all about it, about the dangers of it. Do you think, as you can see on the news now, there's more UFO sightings than ever before. Like, that's why we're doing the show. Like, where there's just so much unexplained out there still. Do you think that this, do you think this fragments religion when we see things like this?
No, I say no.
And I concur. I know that for being Roman Catholic, and the fact that the Catholic Church has a long history. I mean, you know, after, you know, certainly they learned from after, you know, burning Copernicus at the stake for trying to demonstrate that the earth revolved around the sun and that the sun didn't revolve, you know, that type of thing. And so the church many times paid for its sins, so to speak. But I always point out that that summer wave of 47, that the Vatican put out that statement, which read, it was the position of the church that the universe is most likely teeming with other creations. And the fact that you had Pope Benedict, when he was asked, what would be the first reaction of the church upon the arrival of aliens from another planet? And without hesitation, he responded, we would baptize them. Yeah. And so I've discussed this with Cardinal Timothy Dolan, and I've discussed this with Father Robert Spitzer of the Magis Center in Los Angeles. They have absolutely no problem with us having, as far as space brothers, so to speak, that there are other creations, as the church has actually proclaimed.
It's interesting because this topic gets brought up quite a bit. This question gets brought up quite a bit. And I always, you know, I'm a media, and Don knows I always say no. I don't see how it actually goes hand in hand at all. Because if you believe in any of the religious standpoints, Catholic, Christian, whatever, on the creation, you would believe that he created all things. So why would he stop at just our planet and our people? Why would he, if he created the galaxies and more planets, why wouldn't he create life on those planets? Therefore, he would be the God of those planets as well, and those beings. So, you know, I back the church on that regard. Like, you know, growing up baptized Catholic, I mean, yeah, I think it's, I don't know. I, you know, that's always baffled me, where they're like, oh, if aliens came down today, it would, that'd be it. You know, nobody believe in God anymore. And I totally look it on the other side of the coin and go, actually, no, I think it would almost empower the theory and the belief of God even more, to show that there's more creation in our own galaxies and with our own universes, that we are so close-minded to think that we're just we're just so, you know, all powerful on this little planet, but there could be more powerful planets with more powerful people, you know, just, and that are more advanced and more evolved over time. So it's just, it's always a topic that I always find interesting when it gets brought up, or a question, I should say.
And you there's know a lot who, of good. Oh, go ahead, Don.
Oh, you know who often has accused us of creating this UFO sect, this UFO religion, are the debunkers, the scoffers, the skeptics. And generally, these are people who are atheists. Now, they're threatened by anything religious, and they're threatened certainly by the very thought that we may be visited, that they are no longer supreme. They are no longer the smartest people in the room, so to speak. They're more threatened by this than anyone. And as a result, whenever, I don't care what Christian, what Jewish, as far as even through the Bible Belt, I have seldom found anyone having a problem with accepting that there is life beyond this planet and the very notion that we're being visited. The government, for example, the very arbiters of the cover-up were the ones who even created this very notion that it would destroy religion as we know it, that if they were to announce that we're being visited, that we're not alone, that it would ruin religion for all time. And that's balderdash, that's hogwash. That is not the case. That's, again, part of the distraction and the misinformation that, you know, the arbiters, again, of the very deception have been creating since the very beginning.
I bring a little bit of this into my Metatomics book. One of the things that influenced me a lot was I read a book called Angels and Aliens.
Yes.
And it really makes the assertion that angels may have likely been, you know, aliens would be mistaken for angels, angels for aliens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a modern day, would that be the description of them now? You know, is that maybe what we're seeing? And also just the few amounts of them that there were. And I explore the possibility that God experimented with a lot of people. He created the angels first, but created them too powerful with little experience. And then the second creation was an early man creation. And a third creation was that of maybe an Adam and Eve, a genetically perfect, servable human being. And there's a lot of research into angels in that regard. Billy Graham did probably some of the most extensive angel research there was. And I think that there's room for all these things to exist under the same umbrella.
Yeah.
In fact, Billy Graham did believe UFOs were angelic.
Yeah.
But then you have, in many respects, even a higher number of people who believe that UFOs are demonic.
Yeah.
In fact, I've told numerous sources at the Pentagon that presently a good 50% of the high-ranking officers at the Pentagon in Washington believe this is supernatural, that UFOs are more demonic in nature than anything else. Now, again, I don't know if that's intended to scare people off. Don't go there. Don't cross that line. And it gives, you know, it gives them that, you know, that fallback that they don't need to address the situation. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it continues to demonstrate that we're dealing with something, as the late Arthur C. Clarke would even suggest, that we should expect life on another planet almost to appear magical, as he suggested, that we can't comprehend, we can't understand, we can't bridge that level of technology. And I think therein is one of the attractions, again, to these UFO cults, because it does bridge that gap. You know, we're the ones, you know, we provide the bus tickets, so to speak. We'll provide you as far as with the seat on the mothership.
Right.
We're the ambassador. We're the vanguard. We're the representatives here on Earth. And we
know the right people.
Right. Where they very often will dress. They will try to even appear as though they've ascended to that promotion on the part of the ETs. And again, many people will fall for that. They feel that, okay, I won't have a UFO experience, but they will lead me to that promised land. They will provide me with the means to signal down the UFO. We'll attend a retreat. We'll camp out. And we'll flash a light into the sky, and just like that, there will be the light in the distance that will bob and weave and react to, you know, our signal, that type of thing. And go ahead.
And you know, Don, too, they have it to where it's like, and I've heard it, it's, well, the government stops us from our full potential of our control with our mind and being able to tap into that level. The government controls us. And so we have to take that initiative. We have to take that back. And so we're going to be the ones that tap into the meditation spiritual state to where we directly communicate with them and we get the messages that they're trying to provide for us. And then when they gather and these people gather to do these types of, gosh, I don't even know what you'd even call it, but like a camp out, to have these spiritual awakening moments or transfer over into having this communication state with these alleged visions that they're having with these extraterrestrials, they firmly believe that we're in control of that. And then they sit and wait and wait. And if you wait long enough, you know, I think a lot of times it's misidentified satellites, but that's enough to make them think, I had this, you know, epiphany and I saw it and I had this vision. And there it is. I'm following this light in the sky, and it came right as I was having this moment. And it's fascinating to me because it all comes back to the government stopping us from our full potential. And you need to follow me, and I'm going to guide you to this next level. And I'm going to take you because I know the guy who knows the guy who knows the Nordics, who then the Nordics will take us to the reptilians. And it goes on this whole crazy line of how to get to this particular spaceship that's going to be the saving grace. And it's fascinating to me that they, you know, is there no part of the natural mind that makes you stop and go, whoa, wait a minute, let me think this through for a second? You know, like, meditation is fantastic for the brain. You do open up your brain. Meditation is fantastic for the body. I love meditating, but I don't know if it's at the level that if I meditate, I'm going to talk to some, you know, intergalactic leader who's going to give me all the passages and the ways to save our planet. I can't personally, myself, in my own opinion, I personally cannot fathom that, if that makes sense. So it's hard when I hear these claims.
You open that portal, you don't know who's on the other end.
Exactly. Exactly.
Excellent point in that when we were at the beginning of the program, we were talking about the contact, the element back to the 50s. And George Adamski's and the Howard Menger's and Todd had mentioned George King and like Daniel Fry. And we had interviewed one of the groupies, almost like a carnival promoter, who worked with them when they would travel and do these conventions all over the country. And he described how they would be backstage and their bosses would refer to the audiences as marks. In other words, targets. Beyond money, what else will we get from them, including their very lives, so to speak? In other words, we'll get them to essentially commit themselves to our cause. And he described that typically the front rows would be nothing but military brass who would sit there and just cheer them on throughout the entire afternoon as though this is the true UFO situation. Mm-hmm. This is your calling. We endorse this. This is who you should be following, not us. And so, Britt, you make the excellent point that the very void, the very level of cover-up, the very fact that we were not getting answers from officialdom, and that it steered people towards these people who were preying on them financially, emotionally, getting them to sign over their very lives to them. And so in many ways, we can fault the very defenders of this country, those who are supposed to protect us who were mm-hmm. turning a blind eye and saying, well, better they follow them than follow us, because we're not about to provide them with the truth or the answers on UFOs. Don't come to us.
Right. Yeah, it was totally a push off in the wrong direction. Think of the lives that could have been spared.
Totally wrong.
Financially, right. Emotionally, mentally, and even physically, the lives that could have been spared from the push off. It's unbelievable to me.
No basis in truth, no basis in reality. And more times than not, these people were left as nothing more than just hollow shells of their former selves, and had to basically reinvent themselves to just cope with reality, cope as far as with society, ask for the forgiveness of their very families in reuniting themselves with a life that they had abandoned and they had given up for just all types of falsehoods and shallow promises that never came to fruition. But at least many of them managed to escape before they would have, you know, become victims, like in the case of Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate, where they were
mass suicide.
But here's my concern, bringing it to today, in the way that we are right now, with everything that we're faced in social media and you're fear driven. My worry is some of the current cults that are still established within the UFO community that are still thriving. I do worry that there will be another Heaven's Gate type of situation, only because what a better time to prey on the weak, if that makes yes. sense, because people yes. feel that they are stuck in corners with no way out. And then all of a sudden this miraculous person comes with all the answers, and the answers could be on another planet. And the brainwash begins, you know, by binaural beats. We click into the brain, we get these people to open up, and we give them that fulfillment right now that they feel they're not getting from their government. They're not getting from the people around them. They're not getting from their jobs. They're not getting from other families to help them because they feel they can't support their families. You have a perfect time, and I even hate to word it like that, for a cult leader to do horrible damage if not watched carefully right now.
You know, you're right. You're right, Britt, in a lot of ways, because during COVID, when people were isolated, the book sales that spiked were spiritual books. People were alone and cut off from everything. And they didn't mm-hmm. have money. They didn't have opportunities. People were losing their jobs. They were away from their boyfriends, maybe their family. That isolation, that's what people look toward. And there's a lot of people that always call this the Great Awakening. I don't believe this was a Great Awakening necessarily, but I think you're going to see this again in a little bit of a different way, not so much with a pandemic, but with inflation. You know, where there's,
mm-hmm.
you know, gas is jumping 20 cents at a time now. And we're getting into people having to drop $100 to fill up their gas tank. Things are getting really tight, really quick for people, and a recession and that kind of squeeze, or I should say inflation, not recession, inflation, you know, with that kind of squeeze is like a pandemic in a way, in terms of what people are the anxiety people are under and what they're going to look to as a solution, because that's all they want is a solution, and they'll take it wherever they can get it.
Mm-hmm. You're right. I mean, think of even if you go to a grocery store, how much that has inflated as far as price for groceries, what you would normally buy. TV dinners that should cost $2 are now $5. So, and, you know, to paycheck, it's stressful.
It's interesting. I heard a comedian say the other day that, you know, there's no baby formula and gas is $5.15 a gallon, more expensive than a beer. Are we in America for real? Because you would never think that would happen. America can't feed their babies. Really?
Yeah.
This happened here? Like, this is insane. So I think when the world just starts to run amok, you know, people will start to look for answers, and they'll listen to whoever's talking, because they're not believing the real leadership right now.
And as we come towards the end of the program, we can also cast blame on those who, through this entire discussion, should have been stepping to the fore and at least providing people with answers, at least providing people with guidance. And I'm talking about members of the clergy. I'm talking about the churches. And I think a major, as far as downfall of their influence, was the fact that during the entire shutdown, during COVID, their doors were locked, that you couldn't even go into a church, that they followed the lead of the politicians. And I'm sorry, the very act of separation of church and state was violated for all people, in the sense that the same reason that people fall into the clutches of these religious cults is because they are not receiving truisms, they're not receiving answers from the churches, who in many respects can be very ritualistic, can be almost cult-like, but at least it's a revolving door. You can come and go. And theirs was a major failing. The fact that they also allowed the politicians in Washington to essentially preach from the pulpit and tell them what the truth was. And they're the last ones that we should be, holding as far as accountable for the truth, because it would be a first. Their history is nothing but deception. I'm sorry, without getting on a political, as far as bandwagon, it's what actually forces people to fall into the clutches of the cult leaders.
It's true. Yeah, that's 100% accurate, because they should have done more. They should have helped more there. And like you said, the door should have been open. I mean, it just should have. That was a time to step in and not, here you see the church where you're in your head, I can go to the church anytime I need help, guidance, love, food, nourishment, a place to rest my head tonight. Even if I have to lay in the pew, I know they'll let me. But then you don't even have that. But then here's this, guy dressed in shining armor coming at you from a cult standpoint and sees you as an easy target, as you put it, as targets. And you can go, hey, I'll take care of you. Come live with me. Come stay with me. I will give you room. And then, all these poor people, they're lost souls, and they shouldn't be. They shouldn't have to be, because there should have been help for them, and there should have been hope for them. And I hope that even with the cults that are still thriving today, and that matter, I hope that they can be reached as well, at least guided back. I'm fine with believing in UFOs. I'm part of that community as a ufologist. Don, you are too. But there's an extent that, I'm certainly not going to take my life to get on one, if that makes sense. And I think we need to help them.
There's no room for cults within the study and the research and investigation of UFOs. There's no place for it.
Nope.
It has never worked. It has typically always ended in tragedy. And any religious leaders who are worth their salt should be stepping in and saying, well, we at least offer a solution. We offer an alternative. Has nothing to do with UFOs, has nothing to do with aliens from another planet. And that's their failing. That's their failing, not ours.
There should be more research groups, not cults, in the UFO community. Just more people out in the field trying to get information and stats and data for us to collect and provide all the real truth in the matter at the end of the day, not cults. It's not a place for it.
And if anyone wants to know more about cults, they can go see my cult following podcast and they can learn all about all kinds of cults. Until then, I think Britt and I are content just being the two members of the Don Schmidt cult.
Yes. I've signed up for that one. I'm in it now. I can't leave.
No. It's one of the reasons that I think all of us, we keep ourselves grounded by being happily involved with other projects, other endeavors. Those that become obsessed in any one subject, they open themselves up for being manipulated, for being misled, and they too often fall into the clutches of nefarious people that would just as soon lead them down the wrong path.
Yeah.
It's when you're able to step away from your work and observe from an outside vantage point that always enables you to clear your head and adjust and retool as necessary.
Well, I appreciate you all joining me tonight to talk about this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, this topic hits close to home for me because I had to live it with a sibling of mine. So it's interesting to me seeing it firsthand how brainwashed they can be to such extent and witnessing it. It's not, it wasn't a UFO one, but it was a religious cult. It's insane.
For sure. Well, I'll let you take us out, Britt.
And in our case too, where it encroaches on our work, on our territory, when it threatens the research, the extensive work that we've done. And when you see people actually harmed and endangered by it, again, that's where we need to step in and make sure it doesn't happen again.
Exactly. And we know the names of the current ones, and we need to have them on radar and help deter people from not joining, if that makes sense. Try to reroute them the best way possible and help save them.
Agreed.
Metacortex Publishing hopes that you've enjoyed this presentation.
Please take a moment to listen to some other podcast offerings from Metacortex Publishing.
A quest is a search for something. And every week, the Quest podcast will show you how we know what we know through interviews with people that have incredible stories of dedication and perseverance. I'm your host, Todd Fisher. Join me in this thought-provoking and inspiring podcast of discovery. Find us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
The No Earthly Explanation podcast investigates the things that are unexplainable. Hosted by world-renowned investigative researcher Donald R. Schmidt and scientist Ellie Ringo, follow them as they look for evidence for things that have no earthly explanation. Available anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please be sure to rate and review this episode. This podcast is produced by Todd Fisher and Anthony Smith and is distributed by Metacortex Publishing. This podcast is copyright. Any previously trademarked or copyright content is used by permission. Information and opinions stated in this podcast should not be construed as medical advice. Please be sure to visit the official website for Metacortex Publishing at metacortexpublishing.com or find us on social media for other unique content.